had to, you know, manage ourselves through this change and sort of rethink what we can do at this time. And, you know, ABCN and Conversation was born of this because we felt that it was a great opportunity for our business, for our businesses, our business leaders, our schools to connect and exchange and to learn from each other. I'm really, really privileged to have today here Stephen Worrell and Anne-Marie Crivelli, therefore in conversation with you around this important topic, which is managing change. I'm going to start by with the introductions with Stephen and Anne-Marie and then I'll set some questions to them and then open out to questions on the floor. But please feel free to pop the questions into the chat or put up your hand during the discussion or at the end, because I think we want to make this really interactive. And as always, the most important thing is that everybody here gets value out of it. We're going to be wrapping up promptly and we are going to be recording the session. So firstly, let me introduce my panel, Stephen Worrell. Stephen, would you mind coming off mute and saying hello or something so you sort of pop up in everybody's screen?
Hello, everyone. Stephen here.
Great. Great. Fabulous. So Stephen Worrell is the Managing Director of Microsoft Australia. So he's responsible for leading the company here and leading its customers and the more than 11,000 partners and software vendors that they work with. He joined Microsoft in 2014 as a director of enterprise and partners. And previously, Stephen worked for IBM for 22 years, and including leading IBM's software business in Asia Pacific region. He has an honours degree in electrical engineering and an MBA, and has been, you know, very gratefully for us, a passionate supporter of ABCN and then the positive role of business in society, as well as very focused about how to support the mental health of his team and people at work.
Well, that's a very generous introduction, Allegra. I should also say, more importantly, I'm a father of three kids and two golden retrievers. So let's get to the real important stuff.
Thank you. Then I've got Anne-Marie Crivelli. Anne-Marie has a long and distinguished career in education as a principal and educator in school, as well as in departmental and other roles. She's currently the executive principal of Glenroy College, a school in Melbourne's northern suburbs. And I just wanted to, at this moment, to acknowledge all of our Melbourne colleagues in this virtual room and also all of those that we're working with at the moment, because it is a very, very difficult time. And I think we are all around Australia thinking of you all, and we're sending our best wishes. Previous to this, she was a principal of Furlong Park School for Deaf Children, Director of Training and Leadership at Teach for Australia, consultant on school improvement with the Department of Education in the Western Metropolitan Region. She's been and has been an ABCN supporter from really the very early days of ABCN in Victoria. So thank you, Anne-Marie. It's lovely to have you here. And could you also do a shout out and get off mute so everyone gets you? Great.
Hi. Hi. Welcome.
Now, to get people started, I wanted to just warm up by asking you two sort of warm-up questions. Firstly, a book, podcast, or series you are watching, reading, listening to right now, and don't feel like you have to impress us with something too highbrow. We'll probably enjoy it more if it's something a little bit less than highbrow. So, Stephen or Anne-Marie, who would like to go first?
Anne-Marie, you go first, please.
Okay, I will. I've just finished watching the Umbrella Academy series 2, and I'd forgotten how quirky it was when I was watching series 1, and when I was halfway through series 2, I'm thinking, why am I watching this? But anyway, when I got to the end of it, I actually enjoyed it. So, yeah, it's quirky and very different.
Okay. I'll put it on the list. Stephen?
Well, mine is very lowbrow, Allegra, so I'm almost embarrassed to admit, but there's a show on Netflix called Blacklist. Now, some on the phone, on the call, may have heard of it, but James Spader, who was a sort of an actor back in the 80s, which is sort of where I'm from, was very popular back then. So it's a crime series or a spy thriller series. And I must admit, I don't normally watch a lot of TV, but in the new world that we find ourselves in, my wife and I have found ourselves hooked on Blacklist. So okay. My admission.
Excellent. I've got things to look up. And lastly, a secret superpower that people wouldn't necessarily expect from you, perhaps from your job. Stephen, you might have to go first with this one because sure. You made Anne-Marie go first.
Yeah, last time. Right. Well, again, this is an admission. I'm a guilty admission. I like to think I have a good sense of humour, but then I get told very often by my team that I have one of the world's worst set of dad jokes. So okay. I'm not sure that qualifies as a superpower, but if I give you the impression that I think I'm funny, you'll understand why most people think I'm not.
Okay, thank you. That's quite right, the amazing, so, Anne-Marie.
So mine might have to be having a sixth sense, thinking that perhaps I know what people might be thinking or doing without them knowing that I know that.
Okay. Oh. Well, thank you both for that introduction. Look, I thought I'll start with you, Stephen, just saying, you know, what I wanted to do was start off with is just saying, look, we're in this period of change. And I'd love you to start off with a story from your experience about, you know, what is one of the biggest changes that you've had to lead your team through recently, you know, how you prepared for that change, you know, how you actually led the change, what you learnt from the change. And also, given that most of our audience here are from our schools, if you wouldn't mind giving us a very quick introduction to Microsoft.
Yeah,
so, you know, we just like get a sense of, you know, the your scale of your operations, et cetera.
You bet. So, I mean, first of all, I want to echo your thoughts earlier about those in Victoria. I know we have members on the call from Victoria, and I also want to share my feelings of solidarity with each of you, because across the country we've all been dealing with such difficult circumstances, and we all feel for everyone in Victoria. And we hope in the not too distant future that those restrictions down there are eased, as indeed they are across the country. But look, quick summary, Allegra and team, of the operation we have here. Microsoft, as you know, global technology company. We have about 1,500 people in Australia, and we provide a range of support and digital services to our clients to help them use our capabilities. So we have three different clouds, a thing called Azure and another thing called Microsoft 365, which you're all very familiar with because we're using it here, and then another cloud called Dynamics. So three clouds, 1,500 people, and we help businesses, large and small. We help schools, we help hospitals, we help government agencies, we help pretty much everyone across the economy in some form or fashion to use digital technologies, PCs, obviously video conferencing, collaboration technologies and other technologies so that businesses can keep running. You know, for example, Woolworths use a lot of our, just a couple of examples, Woolworths use a lot of our stuff to keep our supermarkets open during this period, where they've been trying to have more safe practices in how they scale up the systems that are necessary to do online ordering, and obviously to make sure supermarkets are full across the country, their supply chain. And there's a thousand examples like that where our services help essential services continue in Australia. So a little bit of a snapshot of our business. To your question then, Allegra, around change, I think the biggest implication for us, as it was for everyone, was early on in February, March, when this all became very real and we were all asked to go and become more socially distant, to implement new policies, in many cases for businesses to go and work from home, and indeed for schools to have kids across the country being schooled at home. So massive shock, if you like, and a massive change. And the big challenge for us at the time was trying to maintain the safety and well-being of our teams as we then moved everyone to work from home. And I think, Allegra, while that sounds easy to do, and every one of us has our own experience of that earlier this year, and again in Victoria, we're going through it again, it has a different impact on every single person. And perhaps the biggest challenge that I faced and the biggest learning that I've had at the same time is the importance of being empathetic, and that simply means trying to put yourself in the shoes of the people around you. And it's almost been impossible to do because, you know, all the different circumstances that we find ourselves in with parents living at home or loved ones being overseas that you couldn't see, or parents with children being homeschooled and trying to work from home, or even people who live alone then being isolated even further during this period. There's been a complete range of responses to these circumstances, and the idea that there's one approach or that we could have one way to deal with these challenges, I learned that very quickly and continue to learn that you have to be aware of the fact that there are so many different reactions to the time that we're in.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. Anne-Marie, what about you? You know, you've been leading a school through this change and through still change. You know, what's a story of one of those biggest changes you've led through your team and what you learned from it?
It's probably the technological change. Schools are meant to be places of learning, but one of the things that we found was that many of our teachers weren't that as familiar with the new technological advances that many of our students are. So what we have found through the really sudden turmoil and upheaval in the way that teachers can deliver curriculum and teach students was it's become a wonderful opportunity as well to see how teachers have, through absolute necessity and the desire to provide the best outcomes for the students, to take on the technical changes and to blossom with them. So yes, it's upsetting, yes, it's disruptive, but I think the end result has been an extremely positive one for everyone. We started being, we erred on the side of caution in the first shutdown, but we learned from that. And in the second shutdown, which is now far more extensive than the first one, we have been able to open up the different options within the platforms that we use. And we do use Microsoft Teams and WebEx as well. So we now have opportunities to use camera. We've got live voice chat that's available as well. So I think starting small is always a good thing, but in what we've faced, we were faced with an upheaval to start with. So when all the cards get thrown up, you have to be able to find some of them that you recognise and you're familiar with in order to then say, okay, I know this now, what's the next thing that can go on top of that? And so we've had to structure the learning of teachers through that. Mm-hmm. And the students have come on board extremely quickly. So but we have had technical issues along the way, but overall it's been a significant positive opportunity.
Yeah. That's wonderful. I mean, I thought this might be a moment to see if any of the other schools in the room want to share any, I guess, briefly share a change that they've led, and particularly that learning, because I think this is about what we have all individually learned. Is there anyone who wants to speak up or share a moment there? I've just come off mute if you'd like to.
Hi, this is Frederick here in Brisbane Bayside State College. I guess one of the things that I would like to say that with the technical issues that's been mentioned by Anne-Marie, we always have to have a backup plan for A, B, C, sometimes D, to make sure we achieve the end result. And I think the reality of things at times, you weren't successful with A, B, and you might get a partial C in there. Everything, if that's just some of our experiences from the technical aspect of things, kids being able to have access to the signing on at home. If they don't have access to the internet, then how are you going to make that available to them? So we've certainly had, SIM cards that have been provided, that which was fantastic and enabled us to make that connection. It wasn't right away, but we moved on from that. So just having that change, I think that's one of the things that we certainly came along with it, and just guiding and supporting each other.
Thanks, Frederick. Thanks so much for sharing, Frederick. Did anyone else want to share one of them there? Murray?
Yeah, Allegra. Look, there's so many things that we've learnt from going through this experience, and certainly we would go through it differently if we were to do it again. But one of the things that that we didn't realise was the number of students. We had about half of our students that were online, but the other half of our school community weren't online.
Yeah.
So the steep learning curve for our high school, low SES area, Sir Joseph Banks High School and Bankstown in Sydney, is how do we communicate with our students when they're actually not online at home, and how do we get them online? How do we cater for their well-being? I know that Stephen talked about the isolation of, his staff. We've got 100 staff, 730 children, and then all of their parents. So it becomes really complex when you're thinking about well-being through the student lens. Mm. We had devices that we supplied to students because we knew they didn't have any, but then they were being used by multiple siblings in the household. So The knock-on complexity for that was that many schools went to face-to-face online period by period in high school lessons, and we learned really quickly that that one device was being used by a number of kids in the high school and primary school. So how could we be more flexible with our curriculum delivery? And the biggest learning and flip and change that we're still working with is rather than being present or absent, it was about engagement. And how do we engage our students when they're offline and not face-to-face? So that gave us a lot of ability to look into the quality of the curriculum we were delivering, how we went about delivering that face-to-face, and the flexibility that we gave to our students through 30-minute lessons, five of those. So the whole school day face-to-face was over in 2.5 hours with 15-minute breaks in between. But we actually gave the students and the staff from 12:30 till 3 o'clock to be able to engage with each other on demand or just to work on what they needed to work on. So trust with our students was built between the students and the staff. And I think that we've also, and I'm sure many of our education colleagues would agree, that we've probably been forced to move forward at least 5 years with where we'd like to be with regard to integration of communication technology in the classroom. You know, people have been thrown in the deep end, but geez, we've come out. We're actually not going back. You know, we've now got 100% of our kids in the classroom every day using their laptops. So we're actually online in the classroom face to face. And we're not going back. So challenging, but good.
But great. Well, look, thank you very much. Thanks both Murray and Frederick for sharing that. They're great. Look, I would like to then, I'll come back then to Stephen and Marie and then open again. Look, I guess, Stephen, again, back starting with you again, what has been, I guess, the hardest aspect of, what has been one of the hardest aspects for you personally of managing this changing time? And, you know, what have you had to do differently? Like, what, you know, have you had to do things very deliberately differently or very structurally very differently to how you'd normally lead?
Very much so. I think going into a remote delivery, you know, engaging with your team through this screen means a few things. One of them is that you lose, and I know we're all conscious of this, but you lose so much in terms of the human experience. And so working with people is and working in a team is about your relationships and about how you engage with each other and all the subtleties that are so present when you're in person with each other. You bump into people in the office, you have conversations that you might not otherwise have because you jump into the lift together and so forth. And so you've lost all of that contact. So definitely thought long and hard about what to change and how to change. And one example is much more frequent interactions. So I might have, in a normal period, a monthly one-on-one with each member of my direct team. In this environment, that's gone to either weekly or bi-weekly and less time. So it might be an hour and a half once a month, but now it's like 30 minutes either every week or every second week. It's a sort of basic example, but an important one, because that frequency of contact becomes important to make sure you're just checking in with each other. I think, as Murray said, there's so many, there are positives that are coming out of this, no doubt, in regards to how things are changing for the better. But at the same time, the most important thing is always to make sure your team is doing okay, you know, safety and well-being, and that it's not just about that one person. It's about their partner, their children, their parents, their friends, because it doesn't take too long to find in everyone's network some really significant challenge going on. And not surprisingly, that's the thing that's on top of their mind, not the, you know, this particular task that you might otherwise have been thinking you were going to discuss. So the idea of connecting, and you know, I mentioned the word empathy purposefully, because it's about truly trying, and no one gets this perfect all the time, that's for sure, but really trying to put yourself in the other person's shoes before you then launch into, so let's get to the class that we've got to do today, or let's get to the task at hand that we have at work.
Thank you. And Anne-Marie, you know, again, for you, what has been, I guess, you know, that the hardest aspect? Obviously, schools have been in, you know, different circumstances, and now yours are in a different one again. What has been the hardest aspect of managing through this change? And have you had to do things very differently to how you previously led your team?
Yes. managing staff remotely is very difficult, as Stephen mentioned, because you tend to rely on the body cues more when you're in person and the anecdotal conversations and the ability to go and talk those incidental parts of the conversation, they're all missed. And the conversation and the communication becomes more controlled and less free-flowing. However, regular contacts, and I've gone from weekly down to daily contact with my key team leaders. I only have the five of them, so it's a little bit more manageable. But with the rest of my staff, I have we have briefings three mornings a week. And I make it a point to make sure that the videos are on so that people at least are starting that connection. The hardest thing I'm having to manage is the it's identifying what the key issues are. And it became apparent yesterday when, and it's highlighted again today in something else I'm dealing with, but it's that ability to be clear. The clarity of instruction and the clarity of information when we don't have it ourselves, and we're not being critical of our leaders because they don't have it. There is no playbook that they can go and make reference to. And one of the main reasons that people regard me as a leader in my community is that I've been through so many different experiences and I've had a range of roles that I usually have a really big playbook to draw upon. There's something that I have experienced that will allow me to make a real assumption as to what to do next because I've got this experience behind me. But none of us have experienced this before. So the personal values that are coming to the fore are the persistence and the resilience. So the thing, you know, we need to be able to say we will get through it and we can get through it. We just have to find our new playbook, our new way of operating. And to do that, you need people to be able to talk things out, but none of them know what's happening either. So I think the communication has become even more important because of the different ways that we are communicating now.
Stephen, I guess one question I'm interested in is, you know, there's obviously the massive change that's happened through so coronavirus, and this has been a force change on all of us in different ways. But sometimes, you know, leaders have to lead change that I guess has less, just has less obvious backing behind it because it's not driven by such an external force. It's the change that you as a leader want to make. How, you know, I'm just interested in, you know, how you approach, you know, if you want a new strategic direction, not because of a coronavirus, but because of, you know, your own business circumstances. You know, how do you sell or lead that change? And is it, again, different to what you're doing now, or is it still the same kind of approaches?
I think the approaches are similar, but clearly, given the environment we're in now, to your earlier question, you've got to be very thoughtful about how are you changing as a result. Change is a really easy thing to talk about in its, you know, abstract sense, but perhaps the hardest thing about change is the personal part, that is, you know, us changing ourselves. And I think the starting point here for me is when you're fearful and anxious, and I'll just personalize it, when at any point in my life, recently and in other times, when you're fearful or anxious about something, could be work, could be family, could be friendships, what have you, your ability to see solutions or your ability to come up with ideas as to how you might find a better way or how you might get yourself out of that situation becomes very confined. And there's science and chemistry behind this because that's how our brains operate. That when you're in that state of thinking or that state of mind, then your options close down. And that's why in many cases, certainly in my life, some problems that I've had I've blown them out of proportion, and perhaps someone on this call might be able to relate to that in your own life, that there have been times when you've had an issue and you have blown it out of proportion, and it was only later that you look back and thought, either that wasn't such a big problem, or I got out of it and it's okay and I've moved on. And so the learning from that is getting yourself into a better state of mind. Easy to say, sometimes hard to do. And one of the conversations we've had recently with our teams, many members of different teams at Microsoft, has been this idea of and. Yes, this is a really challenging time. Yes, I'm stressed. Yes, I'm anxious. At the same time, I'm also hopeful about where we're headed. As Murray was saying earlier, there are some things that have happened in the last 6 months that we will look back on. We look back now, but we will look back in the future and say, that was good. We've actually changed for the better. We're using things in a different way. We found new approaches, and we got some benefits out of this. And it sounds simplistic, I know, but I focus on what's actually positive. This simple idea of being grateful, and a practice that I have every day when I wake up, I literally think through the things that I'm grateful for, just as a small mental practice. That changes your state of mind, your state of being, and I'm not sure I can explain all of the science behind that. Other people have. They've written books about what that does to your internal chemistry, but gratitude and a sense of focus on what is actually what you've got to be thankful for, what is working, amidst all the things that may not be, can then put you in a better state of mind to come up with solutions and ideas as to how you might address where you're at. And so leading yourself is perhaps the most important aspect of trying to, before you can lead anyone else, you've got to be able to lead yourself. And so focusing on how you do that, what works for you, identifying that, then scales, because leaders generally tend to be able to navigate their way through things. And that's where people follow particular leaders because they see that they've got some approach that's working. And usually it starts with themselves.
Thank you. Anne-Marie, did you have any sort of comments on that question of sort of leading, you know, leading now versus leading in times of not so, you know, when you're driving the change as opposed to the circumstances are driving, you know, what needs to change?
I have an approach that I use that, you know, what we show to others when others are looking to us as leaders needs to sometimes be a little bit more confident than we might feel within, because the flow-on effect to others, if we can absolutely be vulnerable, and I frequently am, but I also make it clear that we will, you know, I have to have that positive statement going through it. We will get through this. We will work together to get through it. I don't really know what we're going to be doing now, but you can bet your bottom dollar that the decisions that I make will be evidence-based as best as I can make it, and they will always be made for the best outcomes as I think they will happen. Yes, I might make mistakes along the way and I will own those, but they won't be mistakes that have been deliberate because I'm trying to, you know, crucify anyone or a group or whatever. The decisions will always be made with the best intentions. And I think if you can show that a level of vulnerability, but at the same time a level of confidence and positivity and resilience, I think then that gives other people permission to be vulnerable but also confident in knowing that there are people there who can wrap around them. There are people there who are thinking of them, and all they have to do is then ask for that help. I do the same with students. I do the same with the staff and with parents. I have Zoom meetings and with parents, and I say the same thing. I mean, they want me to be really confident. They want me to tell them it's going to be okay, and I do. But I say, you know, there's something that everyone can do to make sure that we're okay. Your role at this stage is to do this. My role is to do this. The teacher's role is to do this. And if we all do those things together, then at least every day we will, incrementally improve what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Look, I don't think I can talk to about change and with Stephen here without talking about technology, because obviously technology is a massive driver of change, sort of external to coronavirus. So I'm really interested in sort of saying where do you see sort of changes coming down the road? And particularly when we're thinking about our young people that we're working with, what are the skills and mindsets they are going to need in this world of change? You know, what do you as an employer, of many people look for, to manage the changes that are coming down the road?
Yeah. So maybe the second question first, that is, we're seeing a massive adoption of digital technology, and whether it's Teams or whether it's the other clouds that I mentioned and clearly the other players in the tech industry, there's more and more technology being used because it allows us to interact safely, in most cases remotely, and it's also facilitating organizations, including government, to change the way in which they provide services. Very quick example, hospitals, Austin Health, in fact, in Victoria, using technology to do remote consultations and using some basic artificial intelligence to help patients get results more quickly and to get the service they need without having to leave their home. So we're going to see thousands of those examples over the years to come. We're seeing them now. So for kids coming through our schooling system, the first message that I want to share is digital technology is just, it's just a tool, right? This thing we're using here is just a tool. More and more of these tools will be used, and more organizations will need people who know how to interact with them and to utilize them. And so there is a massive shortage of people with digital capability. And so that's an awesome thing, I believe, because for our economy to recover and for kids coming through schools and universities like my kids, that's going to give them the opportunities that we have enjoyed during our working life, Allegra, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's the first thing. And that means for kids in schools and universities, think about, it's not about months and years. There are programs and classes you can do that could be days or weeks that could give you some basic skills, basic literacy. Most kids know how to use technology better than adults anyway, but there are lots of other things you can do to pick up that sort of skill set. And that will be really, really useful no matter what you do, no matter whether you want to go into the education system, into health, into the private sector. Every part of our economy is going to need those capabilities. And so to the first question then, Allegra, about how technology is being adopted and how the use of it is changing, I think maybe it's also connected with the point Murray made about some of the positives coming out. We work with a group called Jawan, who are a organisation that connects corporate Australia with Indigenous communities, remote Indigenous communities around the country. We typically have secondments where people from our company would go and work in or live in a remote community and help them with a project or something that's necessary for that community. We're now flipping that around to do more secondments over Teams. So they're digital. But the same outcomes can be achieved where we might help to build a small application, or we might help to build a database, or we might help to do something that will improve education or health or other outcomes for that community. And so we can do many, many more of them than we could do physical secondments. Mm-hmm. And I think technology is going to will continue to change every part of our life, how we interact with every part of government and how we engage with telecommunications companies, insurance companies, travel companies, and the extent to which you can immerse yourself in that environment, then I think the opportunities, and this is back to that idea of being positive and looking for the way out of this situation, is that those opportunities then become more present and more evident because they're actually all around us.
Mm. And the sort of technology skills are really massively important. I remember when I first, the very first time I met you, you said, but people also need ethics, sort of, I think that is a critical future skill. So I'm interested, is it technology or are there other skills that you're also going to be looking for? Or
Without a doubt. I mean, the technology understanding is very important.
Yeah.
But that idea of ethics, of the humanities, of us being human, is still the most important. So I often talk about people first, technology second. And that, what does that mean? That means that we have a decision to make in terms of how we want to use the technology, because artificial intelligence is a great example. Just because computers can now work things out and do particular things for us, we still have to ask the question and answer the question, do we want them to? And so that has to be a human engagement. And that's why I'm so positive about the future, because the role of us, given these are just tools after all, our role is to determine how to use those tools. You've got to know how to use them so that you can put them to work, but we still ultimately get the decision as to how and where they get deployed. And I think, you know, this is why where people often confuse the idea of, okay, if I want to get into the tech industry, I need coding skills. No. I mean, yes, there are people that we need with those skills, of course, but it's about people who understand how a hospital works, or how does a school work, or how should a government, a Centrelink office work in future? Having that understanding, and then, and only then, thinking about where to use the technology, they're the skills that people that we're after in the industry, and I think more broadly across the economy.
Fascinating. Look, I'm conscious that we've only got 6 minutes left, and I have been so busy asking questions I haven't had a chance to others to ask from around the group. So are there questions really, before I go in more questions, are there any other questions that people have from around the room, around the country? Perhaps put your hand up. There's a little hand thing, or go off mute could be the other way of doing it. Oh, Murray, yeah. Sorry. I can see you there. And also Prairie Wood, is it? Yeah, Prairie Wood as well, I think, has got his hand. Prairie Wood, actually, do you want to speak up? Because I can't see Murray, we've heard from you. So
that's sure. Okay. I was going to say you've heard from me. I'm happy to be quiet. Okay.
Thanks, Allegra. It's just temporary Wood here. We've been having bits of chats and really enjoyed the conversation. We really like the reflective question on how are you changing as a result? And we flipped that to the question of as a leader or as a student engaging in the future or whatever, how do you change for the better? And just that concept around readiness and how do we future prepare? So it's sort of a three jumbled approach. But we really like the flip of the change for the better. You know, like, I mean, Steve obviously brought in some of the mindfulness and that sort of stuff, which was great, great advice. But just a question on that would be great.
Great.
Can I jump in on that, Allegra and Marie here? Yes, a great question, and something that I've been thinking about for a long time, because we know in education, in assessment, it's really hard to assess the soft skills in education, but it's the soft skills that are now the most important skills to have in a community that can't rely on facts and figures and textbooks to give you responses. So it's the problem solving. It's the what if we do this? What might happen if we do that? Those are the things that can't be easily measured through large scale assessment processes. So it's vital that schools have those skills being embedded into the curriculum, because they're the skills that will allow for individuals to develop the persistence and the resilience to get through these sorts of things.
Stephen, did you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I think the back to something I mentioned earlier, but it certainly struck me and continues to. In fact, later today I have a session with our leaders across the country, but we always have been and continue to circle back to this idea of and. So in amongst the most unusual set of circumstances that any of us have faced in our lives, and I hope ever have to face in our lives, we can still be positive about how to navigate our way through. And and back to the I didn't get the name of the teacher at Prairie Wood who made that comment earlier, but the idea,
Melinda,
so thank you for your question. But the idea of starting with yourself, leading yourself, getting yourself into a frame of mind of how am I going to lead my way through this, and then by implication, how can I engage with others around me, I think is one of the building blocks that we've certainly found to be crucial as we've worked together as a team.
Thank you. Murray, should I come back to your question then? Thank you.
Probably more of a comment just to wrap those things together is we've got this value at our school. We call it From Me to We at SJB. Yeah. And the important thing about that value that we teach to our students is that we're actually doing it ourselves as leaders. It's not about, for me, it's not about me as the principal of the school. I'm just one stakeholder. Yeah. But my role is to bring everybody together. So what is the we? And together, I might come up with an idea, but just because I'm a leader or the principal in this case, doesn't necessarily mean it's the best idea. Mm. So by bringing people together and having a learning environment and a leading environment where every stakeholder has a voice, the product becomes stronger than any individual. And if we're leading our educational settings in this way, we're also modelling it for our students to go on and be that for for Stephen in his corporate world, because that's what they know, value and care about in the school. They've seen it modelled and they know what it looks like. And COVID's a great opportunity for our students to have that voice as equal stakeholders. It's their school. Mm. So I guess just to wrap all of that up is, the way that I'm choosing to lead is to bring people together, and it's all about the collective. It is all about the we and being authentic in that, not feeling like you have to solve everything yourself, because there's lots of different solutions out there. So I just thought I'd put that on the table anyway.
Thanks.
I love that, Murray.
Thank you. Look, I'm conscious that it's we're just about time to wrap up. So I wanted to finish off, and I just say thank you, Stephen and Anne-Marie. This has been absolutely fascinating. And thank you, everybody who's contributed and to listen, because it's lovely to have this conversation. What I want to finish off with is sort of one or two either hacks or your, the sort of final pieces of advice that, or things, models that you use in your head, if you haven't covered them, that you'd like to share with the group.
I'll wrap up just with two thoughts. As I was saying to you yesterday, Allegra, one of the things that I'm actually looking forward to and not expecting I'm going to enjoy is the separation anxiety I'm going to have with my golden retrievers, because working from home means they've been stuck pretty much around my feet for the last 4 months, so I'm going to miss that. But the last thought I thought I'd share is this idea of it was someone shared it with me, and it just resonated directly. It was just be kind to your. He said, be kind to yourself, and it reminded me that. And as it's come up, we're in really really difficult times. We've never been through this before. We're all trying to do our best, as Murray said, together. How do we find a way forward? But ultimately, we'll get through it together. And in the process, if we're kind to ourselves, then we'll probably get through it a little better than we might otherwise.
Thank you. That's really a lovely thing to finish.
I would just finish with the fact that if what we have been doing in education is worth keeping and is valuable, it will survive. But I'm also a very strong advocate of the fact that if something is not quite working, and there are some issues in education, school-based education for sure, then a disruption to that will force us to think differently. And there's nothing wrong with that. Mm. What is valuable will survive. But I think there will be a lot more positive changes that hopefully will come through this as well. Okay. And I think the students in the room need to know that I think with technology opening up, I think different career options will come out of this as well. So look for the opportunities when doors are open for you.
Thank you both. Okay, well, they're wonderful words to finish off with, to be kind to yourself, and what is valuable will survive. So I think we all need to look for those opportunities. It's been a really beautiful webinar, guys, and just the messages and I think some encouragement I think that you both have provided has been really wonderful. So thank you everybody for joining from around the country. Thank you, Stephen and Anne-Marie, very much for your time. And we are recording this, so we will share this so that if you want to share it with other groups that you can. Otherwise stay well, take care, and we'll see you all soon. Thank you everybody. Yes, little brown apple.
Thanks for being such a wonderful host, Allegra. Thank you.
Allegra.
Thank you very much, guys.
You have the career in the media on top of everything. Yeah, sure. See you too.
Very funny. See you, everyone. Have a great afternoon.
See you, Anne-Marie.